Today on our show,
we're counting down the top 10 thrillers of the noughties.
Hit it, Paulie.
Wow.
Yeah, welcome to 373. That's our episode today for the Countdown Podcast. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast. We count down movies and sometimes television in order of awesomeness, so you don't have to. Today's topic, as just stated, is, of course, the best thrillers. Big, big genre.
Huge genre. And let me tell you something, Paul, straight off the bat.
Oh, here we go.
Okay. So you look at this list of thrillers of the noughties, and technically spy thrillers are in there. Technically this is in there.
And crime thrillers.
Crime thrillers are that, right? I just wouldn't, you know, there's a couple of very obvious choices I left out on purpose with mine. Cool. It just, you know, just because I talk about it so much.
Yeah, I left.
I'm giving you 10 sort of fresh ones.
I moved away from mostly. I've got one sort of obscure dystopian.
Well, there's one spy thriller from a certain spy that I'm a fan of that you'd think would be in there, but I just didn't do it.
Yeah, okay. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Not in my list either.
Good, good.
And I also left off sort of future sci-fi stuff. Kind of left those ones out as well.
Sure.
There's a couple of...
There's one to do with magic that I also left off.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That does surprise me.
Yeah, just because I love it.
Not on my list.
Okay, you know I love it, but it's...
The Prestige, obviously. Prestige.
Yeah. I've left it off because it's just... I talk about it so much, I'd rather give you 10 new things to talk about here.
All right, I've got some different ones, but I've got a couple of mainstays towards the top of the list.
That's how it's going to go for us. Like, because we're doing these shows, right? Yep. We've been doing them for like years and years. We're now going to sort of like give
mix
you
an
alternative kind of... Yeah. Yeah,
mix it up a bit and yeah, you know, penalize us if you will in the votes. But
Feel free.
That's absolutely fine in that respect. Well, speaking of the vote, then let's get into it in the segment which kicks off every show. It's called The Recount.
Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount?
The recount, the mail room, the poly. Let's hit it.
Right. So all the information relates to last week's poll for episode 372. The superior list of A24 indie films. It was a comfortable victory for mine. 34 votes to 15 in the Facebook list community votes. That's the only place you can vote, I should say.
Damn.
On the list each week. Now, some of the feedback. Troy Spinner, the man who goes to all the trouble to write down the list each week. And normally he doth vote for you, but this week he said Paul had a list that didn't include Uncut Gems as a better movie than Hereditary, so wins by a mile.
Oh, wow.
So he copped some shit for...
These things happen. I mean, yeah. I understand.
Adam Allure, top level patron of the show, said Paul gets the vote only because he had Hereditary and The Lighthouse higher. Stu from the Stuart Order podcast said, Wayne wins for not having Midsommar. Easily the single worst big budget movie I have ever seen in my life. Not on this list.
That makes me, because I'm always thinking about watching it because you talk about it, a lot of people talk about it, but I'm glad someone hates it. Gives me a reason not to watch it.
Adelaide Spence said, normally I'm a Wayne Shield, but my strong distaste for Sacred Deer in the Lighthouse has locked a Wayne vote this week. That being said, you both should watch more films. Yeah, that's fair.
Fair enough.
If I had more time, that would be a lovely... Mike Magosian said Paul, but was missing Uncut Gems, but had Climax in the correct top three. I went to see Climax cold, didn't know anything about it, or even who directed it. What a ride. Loved it.
Climax.
Talked about it last week.
Okay, cool.
Chris Yiddy, high level patron of the show, also said, Wayne almost got my vote for seeing more than 10 A24 films.
Fair.
Jamie Davies, who was a big fan of this topic when it was announced, said, do you know what? For the first time ever, I can't pick between you. 15 great films. Everyone's a winner this week.
Wow, that's nice. That's nice.
That's a nice one to go out on, I think, in that regard. But there's something else I want to talk about.
Bring it.
When you think of thrillers, do you think there's anything more thrilling than shaving your ballsack?
No.
With the Manscaped 4.0 lawnmower.
Lawnmower 4.0. See, you would think that it would be thrilling to have a shaven ballsack. But the truth is, shaving is pretty thrilling too because you've got the Manscaped 4.0. This bad boy has got some ceramic-ass blades.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anti-nick
technology, which means no blood down there. You know, hopefully.
No one wants to see blood down there.
No one wants to see scars on your dick and balls and pubic mound.
What happened there?
Foreskin.
Well, one time back in Afghanistan or whatever.
No.
That's right. No one wants to see blood down there. Yeah. So you want to be pristine, clean, but not... hurting.
That's right. See, with a Manscaped, you've got comb sizes, so you can pick. You might want casually shaggy, or you might want what we like to call morning mist, or you sometimes
straight up buzz cut.
Yeah, it's the D'Onofrio. You just go straight down, right? And that's what I do. I'll be honest with you.
Oh, yeah, if you're going to do it, you're going all the way.
You're going all the way, right? Right. Now, lately, it's been a little just a tuft kind of thing, but I'm still very happy with it, and it's very neat, okay? And very aerodynamic, and that's good, because people, when you've got less hair down there, you got less smell down there.
Yeah, that's right.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, I really think that. And by the way, this Manscaped pack comes with a ball deodorant.
Yeah, and a ball spritzer.
Ball spritzer! Yeah. Who don't want to spritz
comes
their balls?
Comes with a nose and hair. This is part of the performance package.
Performance package.
So you can get the Lawnmower 4.0 as well as all these other things and a pair of boxers.
Boxers!
Speaking of boxers, though,
Manscaped they got new boxers.
Just launched their new boxing line.
That's right.
It's their Boxers 2.0.
That's right.
Which contains the Jewel Pouch.
The Jewel Pouch.
Trademarked.
Ladies and gentlemen, gentlemen really I'm talking to here. This boxer pair has a pouch for your ball sack, okay? It makes your balls breathe. It gives you a ball.
Well ventilated.
Well ventilated. It's like gills for your ball sack. You know what I'm saying? So you don't get that sweaty thing where your nut and your thigh, they get wet and they stick together and they chafe and shit. Yeah. No, no. The ball sack, like, what's it called? The Jewel Pouch.
That's it.
Puts your balls in a beautiful pouch to make them just kind of happy all day.
Made of micro-modal fabric, which is buttery, soft, and breathable, and keeps your cucumber cool.
Very nice.
I don't know if I've ever referred to it as a cucumber before, so today is a day of firsts.
It's an eggplant for me. It's totally not. Yes, and you know what? Manscaped's going to give listeners of the Countdown podcast 20% off and free shipping.
Yeah,
all you got to do
is head over to manscaped.com.
That's right. Make your order.
And then when you are purchasing at the code, write in CDPC20.
At checkout.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Free delivery and 20% off. And of course, this is a paid partnership that we have entered into with Manscaped.
So if you're thinking about some great balls or giving your great balls to someone or showing them to someone.
Goodness gracious. Smooth balls of fire.
Exactly. Just, you know, this is the time, people. Hit it up. CDPC20 at checkout.
Manscaped.com. All right, well, without any further ado, on the other side of this music cue, let's do it, the top 10 thrillers of the noughties.
Thrillers of the
Noughties is the subject of this week's countdown. Pretty straightforward. 2000 to 2009. We've already spoken a bit about what we've ruled out, so let's get straight into it then. I'll lead away with my number 10. It is a foreign film out of Germany.
Beautiful.
It's called The Lives of Others from 2006, directed by Florian Henkel van Donnersmack.
Fergen?
This is a story just before the fall of the Berlin Wall, so it's set in the 80s.
Interesting.
And it's basically follows an academic. He's I think he's a university or lecturer or professor, and his lover, who very active and wanting to obviously bring an end to the separation between the East and the West in Germany.
Okay, but and they both live...
They live on the East German side.
Oh, both of them do?
Yes, yeah, on the communist side.
Right, right.
And unfortunately, East Germany's secret police have gotten wind of them and have planted listening bugs and whatever. And there's one officer assigned to effectively bring them to justice, according to what's happening over there. And he gets more and more involved in their life and kind of starts covering up for them. Because
goes sweet on them.
Yeah, a bit, because he really likes these two people and comes to care for them. But yet his duty and his superiors are breathing down his neck. Like, where's the evidence on this, on these people?
Yeah.
And it's how the film goes from there. It's really, really well-told
story. The Lives of Others?
Lives of Others.
That's cool.
137 minutes long, so it's a slow film, but really builds up the tension throughout. It's much more of a, it's not like thrill, 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 but it gradually eats away and the film gets to where it's going to get to.
Wow, I've never seen this one.
Makes an impact. It's in the IMDb Top 250. It has been for a long, long time, so it's very highly rated around the world for those who are into such things. It has a 4.1 rating on Letterboxd.
Very nice.
Yeah, well worth a watch if you're at all interested in that sounding kind of thing.
Very classy. Now, ladies and gentlemen,
he's an author, by the way, not a professor.
He's an author. Well, speaking of authors, Paul, back in the 90s, showed me a book called American Psycho.
Oh, yes.
And he said, yo, this book is the only book I ever had to buy under the counter, and it was wrapped in plastic like it was porn.
Wrapped in plastic.
Right. And he had to show 18 plus, all that kind of thing. So I obviously borrowed it, and I was like, damn, this book is crazy, man. Like, there's a whole chapter that's just about Phil Collins, and then there's
Huey Lewis in the news.
Huey Lewis, I was like, damn, what's this? So then the movie comes out, 2000, American Psycho, and directed by Mary Harron, interestingly, a female director. And it's, of course, where I discovered Christian Bale. And I thought to
not
myself,
Empire of the Sun.
No. Oh, sorry. Yeah, you're right. But I did not pick those two. Like, I was not the kid from Empire of the Sun. He looked nothing like him. So when I saw him, I was like, damn, this is actually what I think Patrick Bateman would look like. And the way this film goes is what's interesting. First of all, for a horror movie, I guess it's a thriller, horror movie, whatever. I loved it. And it was the whole point of the movie is kind of just reminding you to fear the 1% and showing you how fucking like horrible and how self-absorbed he was in the 80s and the corporate fucking New York, yada, yada, yada. All that great stuff is excellent, right? But Patrick Bateman is giving this, I'm trying to listen to Huey Lewis and the news, but she's birding in my... And she's giving that kind of a delivery. And apparently everyone on set thought he was just a bad actor. They didn't know what he was doing. Yeah, they were actually like, Jesus, this guy's terrible. And they didn't understand what the director and him had agreed on. But then it works so well in the actual movie. And the ultimate thing here is that we tried to figure this out when we had the book. We didn't know that Patrick Bateman actually did do all the murders or not, or whether it was all in his head. And the movie seems to actually confirm that it's in his head. And then Brittany Ellis has said since.
Yeah, the book, it's a delusion, right?
That's what you guys showed me, but I didn't believe it until you guys brought up to me and said, you know what, he's talking about that he met this girl that he previously did this stuff with.
Horrendous stuff,
too. Yeah, like, and I was like, that wouldn't happen. And then at the end, he goes around shooting people in New York and doesn't get busted.
Yep.
It happened in his head, which is the best thing about the film, because it's all horrendous.
Because what did Brett Easton Ellis say? The worst thing he would do is
have bad thoughts about you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very bad thoughts.
Very bad thoughts about you, exactly. But he wouldn't actually do any of those things, right? So, yes, it's disturbing, but at least he didn't do it.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I loved American Psycho, and I love the business card scene.
It's a famous one. I'm much more a fan of the book than I was of the movie. It was a little bit disappointing for me, which is
why
it doesn't appear on my list. But lots of people love it. So.
Yeah. No, fair enough.
And a difficult film to adapt, to be fair.
Oh, so. I'm amazed that they pulled it off, which is why I'm so impressed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to do a little bit of a shop out here based on our discussion at the start of the episode. Originally, I had here at number 9, I had The Departed.
Departed.
But you know what? Let's talk about films less so. Like The Departed, everyone knows about Departed. Yeah. Martin Scorsese's Academy Award winning film following an undercover mole in the police force and the police force having an undercover mole in the gangster organization headed by Jack Nicholson. Well,
pure magic.
It was all based on Infernal Affairs.
Ah, you went with the Hong Kong movie.
The
original
Hong Kong
film.
Version thereof, directed by Andrew Lau and Alan Mack. And it's the exact same story, but the original version 4 years before in 2002.
Now, did you see this one before?
No.
You didn't.
So that,
I did like
first.
As well. I saw Departed, and I'm like, this is the best thing I've ever seen. And then you go see Infernal Affairs just to see how it turned out. Now, look, I like The Departed better, right?
Well,
because
let's face it.
Scorsese.
You're starting with here's a film, and Scorsese says, I can do it better.
Yeah,
Of course he can.
Of course he can. It's Scorsese, right? So,
But in terms of shining a light on probably the film that people haven't seen, which would The Departed would not exist without this movie.
Agree completely. And
because it's a straight American adaptation thereof, the same material, this is really good.
Do you remember, because in the scene where, spoilers everyone, but where the Martin Sheen character falls out a window,
yep,
that the version of that in Infernal Affairs, do you remember how that was treated?
Vaguely.
I'm trying to remember now whether it was the slow-mo fall down or not, or he did something different. I'm really kind of intrigued. Someone out there can tell us that. But yes, very, very cool. Nice work.
And again, good performances all around. As far as I can tell, it's always hard to tell in a different language whether someone's a good performer or not, at least for me.
No, for me too.
But this absolutely sings. It's way shorter. It's only about 100 minutes long.
Mm.
So everything happens at a faster pace, and the tension is arguably it's a more tense film as a result.
Yeah.
It may not have the same impact when things happen, but because it's constantly, there's far less of the talky-talky character building stuff. There's enough here in what's shown. So,
by the way, Marky Mark was great in this movie, wasn't he?
Marky Mark in The Departed.
Departed, sorry.
In Infernal Affairs, obviously, which is my choice.
Yeah, so I'm saying. But okay, cool. Nice one. All right, my number 9 may make some of you titter and laugh and giggle, but I've always liked this film and I still stand by it. And, well, have at me. It's Swordfish.
Wow.
I love Swordfish, man. I fucking love Swordfish. It's got John Travolta, Hugh Jackman, and Halle Berry's tits. And it's it is a crime.
Halle Berry and her.
And a tase. Crime thriller. It is the world of Swordfish, basically the world's most dangerous spy, who is John Travolta with odd facial hair and a sort of pseudo mullet. he's called Gabriel Shear, and he has to coerce a computer hacker, the world's most attractive computer hacker, Hugh Jackman, to hack into, like, he's been released from prison and everything, and hack into this like government fund facility and steal $6 billion. Okay,
that's
$6 billion, exactly. And this film here is pure, I want to say 2000s, but it's 2001. It's really 90s, late 90s style. I actually think that it's still going there, okay? It's a bit of hangdog, kind of cool. People's suits are still slightly big. But, like, it was very kind of... what was just weird about it? Like, there's a scene where
I don't understand your absolute love for this movie. It's fine.
Good, man. It's so good because, like, I don't know. Every line is the way it... I don't know. I love every bit of it. Like, even the Halle Berry parts and the fact that it didn't end the way you want it to and the big, you know, the explosion.
That was certainly memorable. That's what, for the time, 20 years ago, to do that.
But it's like, but now you look at it and sort of it's pure cheese because you look at it from the perspective of now. But the overt styling of it just really appealed to me. It was kind of, it's flashy.
All right.
You know, it's me. Swordfish, my number 9.
Shock horror. Wayne had Swordfish on his list. My number 8. Is another foreign film. This one is called The Secret in Their Eyes and directed by Juan Jose Campanella and stars people, of course, that you and I probably never heard of.
You're going indie with this list, man.
Spanish film, man. And it basically follows, it's like two timelines. It's a retired legal counselor. He writes a novel trying to find clues to murders that were never solved.
Mm-hmm.
He's totally in love with his female supervisor at the time, who's gone on to be like the DA now in whatever area. And so he's retired from being a cop and whatever else. So things happen in the film which reveal that the killer is back. So we're now talking 10, 15, I can't remember, number of years later.
Okay.
And he comes back in to sort of consult and help with the case, which the DA is also trying to, I think it's the DA, but I can't honestly remember whether they're lawyers, whatever. But she's high up now, way higher up in proceedings. And it's both their kind of, because she's married, I think, from memory, their rekindling kind of romance, as well as trying to solve this murder, and a really clever sort of reveal on what's all happening with it.
Is it a thriller / romance? Not quite.
The romance is way understated.
Yeah. Okay.
They remade this film with Julia Roberts, and I can't remember who else.
Oh, really?
She was the boss, and it's fine.
What's it called again?
The Secret in Their Eyes.
The Secret in Their Eyes. Yep. Ah, okay. That sounds interesting. And you really dug it, eh?
Yeah. 2009. Another 4.1 on Letterboxd. And again, in the IMDb top 250 of all time. Or at least it was. It may have dropped out by now.
Very nice. Okay. Good one. I'll check that out. My number 8 is Minority Report, everyone. It's a Stevie Spielberg film.
Sure. Yep.
You know, you got your Colin Farrell in there, which is the first time I've seen him, and I was amazed at his performance. Okay.
I've watched the film once. I don't remember
really
much about it other than the spider things chasing him through the shower.
Well, there, you remember that.
Yep.
This is a Tom Cruise movie, and he's a police chief running a futuristic pre-crime unit that arrests murderers before they kill. They have a machine with like 3 precog beings, and they can somehow see it happen. There's a lot of weird, like, you know, sort of moralistic
you can imagine a lot of criminals being caught before they've done something going,
what have I done to deserve this bullshit? And there's the soundboard, everyone.
Yeah, it's been a while. Nice to have you back this week, soundboard. I know we had the ode to you last week, but it wasn't the same without you here.
It is based on a Philip K. Dick story, and what I think I love about the film is, yes, it is Steven Spielberg doing this thing where it's a very light blue colored film. It's almost like a Len Wiseman film, but light colored blue instead of dark blue.
Yep.
But of course, because it's Steven Spielberg, it's the shit. Now, this is where the cool gadgets are. Okay, there's a fucking shockwave shotgun that they use, which flips around and boom, fires. Like, if you hit someone, they fly into the air, but they don't actually die. That's cool.
Well, fell to the ground and snapped their neck.
Yeah, that might happen. But at least it's not blowing a hole in them, right? So that kind of shit happens. The actual Tom Cruise-ness of it all, where he's taking this precog and saving her, and, you know, he's got this sort of, his kid went missing over years, so he's always been, like, fucked up about that. Drugs, all sorts of shit. Really, really great film. And
of course,
Yes, he ends up going on the run. It's actually most of the movie. And it's just a really, really awesome film. I'm sure everyone's seen it, though.
I remember enjoying it. Like I said, just had never returned to it. And I left it off because I left off the sci-fi thriller ones.
Yeah,
that's just my choice.
Fair enough.
All right, very nice. Number 7 is another foreign language film.
Fucking hell. This motherfucker.
This one is more known than the others, though. This was Old Boy. So Park Chan-wook's film from 2003, and it follows a guy who basically gets kidnapped and put inside this inescapable, seemingly hotel room, but basically a prison cell for, was it 15 years?
15 years.
And then gets released and is trying to find out who put him there and why.
Mm-hmm.
It features, obviously, one of the greatest action sequences or fight sequences, but the thriller being, you know, this mystery of who did this to him and him trying to track down through various clues and whatever, because he's pretty single-minded by the time he gets out of there. And then one of the more disturbingly shocking endings in film history. So
you know what? When I watched this film, because that's all I heard, this one said to me, dude, the end of it's going to fuck you up, right? I'm like, okay. And then the way that they revealed that ending, I didn't get it because I didn't recognize the girl in the pictures. And I was like, is that? And then someone told me finally what it is. And I'm like,
because your brain doesn't want to go there. This film, again, is 20 years old, almost 19 years old. If you haven't seen it, you clearly don't care.
Well, this is the thing, though, right? That was a conceit of the film. It was not. This was made from a graphic novel, and that twist at the end is not in the graphic novel. And Will Smith wanted to make this movie, except in the movie, he just slaps everyone. But they actually didn't go that way. They went with the Josh Brolin kind of version.
A lot of writers credited. Five dudes, including the director, credited.
So. Word is that the director's idea was that twist.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's an amazing film.
It's certainly a ballsy twist, let's say, and memorable. That's really what it's all about. So yeah, Old Boy was a walk-up onto my list.
Damn right. My number seven features one Harrison Ford, and it is actually the best acting I've ever seen him do. It's What Lies Beneath.
Oh, that's a controversial one. I quite like this movie. I see why it's on the list totally. It has its detractors now.
Does it?
I think so.
All right, so everyone, this is a Bob Zemeckis film, and it's got Harrison Ford, Michelle Pfeiffer, Miranda Otto, and it's a mystery thriller thing. Long story short is that Harrison Ford is married to Michelle Pfeiffer, and you find out through the film that this girl keeps appearing to Michelle Pfeiffer. It's like a ghost, kind of, right?
And what is a ghost?
What is a ghost, yeah. And she's like, who's this girl? Who's the girl? Doesn't know what's going on, doesn't know what's going on. As the film unfolds, spoilers, it turns out Harrison Ford once banged this student of his, because he's Harrison Ford and he's a professor, so you know he's getting some fucking ass.
So right? He's sitting there in classroom and girls blinking
the I love you. Yeah, yep. Exactly. All that, right? He did, in fact, do it with her. It all blew up. Michelle Pfeiffer found out, but then she blocked it from her memory and she doesn't know what's going on and she's remembering in the past. And then basically Harrison Ford does a performance I didn't think he was capable of, because once the turn happens towards the end, Harrison Ford is the most evil fuck. Like, I was like, holy shit, he's actually just doing this character.
Yeah, yeah, yep.
It was surprising, man.
Han Solo and Indiana Jones can do this?
I know. And I was like, dude, he actually... And then this is Robert Zemeckis, so he's got cool shit. Like, there's a scene where this camera arcs over the floor and she's on the floor. Then it passes through the floor and you see her lying on glass.
Yeah.
Amazing fucking film with cinematography. But Robert Zemeckis is Robert Zemeckis, right?
Yep.
So for him to do a horror, thriller, mystery...
Definitely a thriller. I think it's primarily a thriller.
Yeah. It's just outstanding. So yeah, What Lies Beneath. I hope you've already seen it. But even if you haven't, I just maybe spoiled it a bit for you, should go see it.
Definitely spoiled it. But yeah, if you're at all interested, you could see it. But again, what was that? 2005, 2006?
2000 and... 2000.
2000, shit, that long ago. You had more than two decades. Surely, osmetically, you knew what happened in this movie by this particular point. As with my number six, again, it's one we talk about a bit, and should I put it on there or should I not? I decided to leave it in Training Day.
Training Day. Yeah. Oh, yeah, good
call. Antoine Fuqua's. Yeah,
his only good film.
It's
absolutely.
A crime. I don't agree with that, but it's a crime thriller, but it's a thriller.
Yes, absolutely. This is, like I said, it's his best movie ever. It's probably Denzel's best movie, I'll be honest with you.
That's a big call. I have to really think about that one.
The only thing that I could... Man, I was never more impressed with Denzel than this, because he's like, whatever... I think he was our age when he was doing this show, right? And he was like,
2001.
Being cool as a mother, just pulling off that gangster cop thing.
Kong ain't got shit on me.
That's even before that, all of his, he's wearing chains and stuff. He's got his badge on his thing. He's obviously a badass cop in the hood. Just so cool. And the way it worked out as a film in the plot, wicked.
Yeah, Ethan Hawke's first day in the new narcotics department, mm-hmm. and he's being mentored by Alonzo Harris. And it's just... their machinations, as basically Alonzo tries to get him to become involved in the, or at least show him the way, this is how we work here.
Crooked affairs, yes.
He's corrupt and he's taking money and you need to get on board. And when Ethan Hawke's Jake doesn't necessarily jive with that,
mm-hmm.
bad shit happens
and it's such a, it all happens in one day. So it's the bomb. Yeah,
yeah, it's one. a one day one. This is written by David Ayer, of course, who's very hit and miss, but when he hits hard.
This is the shit. Nice one.
Thank you.
All right. My number six is The Hurt Locker, a 2008 film. Catherine Bigelow directed. Jeremy Renner's in it. Guy Pearce is in it. It is about basically this is a bomb unit in Afghanistan, bomb defusal unit. And following the death of their staff sergeant in Iraq, this specialist finds their explosive ordnance disposal unit saddled with a very different team leader. It is Staff Sergeant William James, i.e. Jerry Renner, who is an inveterate risk taker. He seems to thrive on war. He's got this odd death wish kind of thing. But there's no denying his gift for defusing bombs. So what it is, it's sort of a character study on this dude who is lives dangerously. His job is on purpose a bomb defusal guy, and he's really good at it. But there's something he gets from the thrill of doing it. And it's an odd kind of dichotomy when you're watching, like, ooh, I hope it doesn't blow up. But yeah, what is this guy
thinking? That's where the thrill elements come from, all these bomb defusal scenes. And,
yeah, yeah, and it's like, dude, this is, and this is where I noticed Jeremy Renner. I actually think Jeremy Renner is an awesome actor, right? Like, I know Hawkeye. I love Hawkeye. Fuck it, right?
the boldest call on this episode, right,
but
there
the
for
Hawkeye
you.
Hawkeye TV show is my favorite of all the Marvel TV shows. I know. Paul loves, like, Loki. But
Loki, sure, for me.
But, yeah, Jeremy Renner, this is why I think he's a star, this film. He can nail. He's so, he's got little, I've seen him in Louie, that is this TV show. Of Lucy Cage, yep. And he's got this little part in it, but man, he nails it each time. He's just got a really, even though he looks, he's sort of an odd bulldoggy looking guy. He's not a conventionally handsome guy, but he's so probably one of the best character actors, honestly. So,
whoa, hold on.
Underrated.
That's a big call. Underrated.
Because he was Hawkeye, a lot of people think, oh, this guy's like a movie star, you know, but he's got some fucking chops, man. So, yeah.
All right.
And he flips houses.
That's what he does, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does on the side.
Now moving into the category of films which I really like, love in some cases, some of which do get some play on our show, but they're still really underseen.
Yeah.
And I would say this is one of them. James Mangold's 2003 film, Identity.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hang on. Tell me which,
Identity is the one where, so John Cusack
and
co all wind up at a remote kind of desert hotel.
Yeah.
And they start getting picked off one by one. So it's kind of like Agatha Christie. There's a murderer amongst them. They're killing them one by one.
Mm-hmm.
It's this person. Oh, no, they just died. No, it's this person. Oh, no, it can't be them. They were in this bit here.
Mm.
And meanwhile, it's flipping back and forth to a seemingly a sideline story where you think it's establishing who the killer is. There's this person who's in an insane asylum.
He's like saddled up and stuff.
And they start to turn on one another, obviously, accusing one another. And yeah, it's just one of those great, fun, Ray Liotta, Amanda Peet, John Hawkes, Alfred Molina.
Mm-hmm.
Just about everybody's a recognizable person, but maybe not a star of any particular film. Other than John Cusack and probably.
Let me tell you something. The execution of this was great. It was good actors, good performances, interesting thing. I won't give this away, but the conceit or the gambit of the film, to me, makes the whole thing not matter. That's all I will say. That was the problem I had with this film. It's like, but none of this matters.
Yeah, whereas I disagree. It matters a lot.
It doesn't. You know what I mean, man.
I do know, but it matters a lot. You're thinking about it from a different perspective.
But that means that none of the shit is, you know, like, of consequence because it's all... You know, I'm just saying, if you see this film, get back at us, right? If you haven't seen it, go see it. Tell us what you think of the ending. Tell us what you think, how that affected the preceding whole entire movie.
Yeah, do you like it or not?
Yeah.
Whereas I loved it.
I mean, I can see why people would like it, but for me, I'm like, wait, that's not satisfying me, so yeah.
That was my five.
Okay, my number five is... I'm fond of the film Phone Booth. Phone Booth, 2003. Yeah. Okay, so Joel Schumacher film. And by the way, Joel Schumacher, another underrated director. This guy's great. I know Batman Forever.
You know, he claimed before he died that he had slept with between 20,000. 10 to 20,000 men.
Yeah, it was a New York Post article where he actually said
sleep with more people than Wilt the Stilt Chamberlain reckons that he did.
Yes, but I've just discussed it. I saw this on a podcast as well. They were talking about it. He actually said, because you would have to actually do. I think the numbers work out to be 400 a year. You have to fuck 400 people a year.
Well, I thought it was more than that.
It might even be more than that.
No,
over the years, he said, because Wilt Chamberlain reckons...
It was over a certain period of time.
Yeah, Joel Schumacher just said, I've done this many over his life.
Three people a day?
Yeah, three people
a day.
Good
on you, Wilt.
You know, here's how we reckon he does it. Because Joel Schumacher had more dick than anyone, and he was a Hollywood producer, and he used to be a hairdresser in Hollywood. He was like a hairdresser to the stars,
right.
And he became a director. So he... I think went to orgies every night where there was like 300. Oh, well, you know, whatever. Say 50 cunts. Well, for 20 cunts, right?
Well, given Joel's proclivities, I don't think there were any cunts.
Okay, exactly. So he could have touched on, and at this stage, it depends on what you call sex. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, okay.
Like if it's just a pole in a hole, then all right. But do you have to arrive? No, I imagine not. Is it sucking dick? Is that oral sex? Might be, you know?
Yeah, sure.
You can touch all 20 guys and call that 20 in a night. And if you do that like weeks on end, you'll get to 20K. So, but I'm sorry, the movie.
Phone Booth.
It's basically Colin Farrell is this smarmy PR man, and he goes and he's walking in New York, and there's a busy street, and then he answers a phone that's ringing. Turns out.
Why would you? If a public phone's ringing, why would you pick it up?
You're right. But I can see some people doing it.
I'd be like, keep walking.
Anyway, so it turns out on the other end of the line is a sniper who's like basically making threats and saying, Lou, you have to convince the police of this story before they shoot him or drop the phone. If you drop the phone, I'll shoot you. He basically got him hostage there. And it is, I don't want to say tour de force, but what was cool about it was it seemed like an expensive student film that someone could make. It was a good idea. The film was really, really cheap to make because it's one set. And it's on the soundstage.
Largely.
Yeah. A few external shots, but yeah. And that's it. It's just a drama between this voice on the phone and Colin Farrell freaking out. So it made a boatload of money by comparison because it was so
cheap. Such a low budget, yeah.
And that's something a clever student would do. Do you know what I mean? Like Blair Witch Project and shit like that. They'd have this gimmick that worked, but Hollywood did it. And that's what I love about the film. Also, the way it resolves and stuff was actually very cool. And you do get to eventually see Kiefer Sutherland only in blurry, but it was cool that they did that, you know? So I liked it very much. Phone Booth, everyone. Phone Booth.
Good voice for it too, Keith. So that was well cast, I think.
Damn right.
All right. My number four, last foreign language film on my list.
Bloody hell.
And the one closest to being a dystopian sci-fi, because it's not really. It's set in a weird kind of future in Japan, in which the government has passed an act whereby they need to crack down on juvenile delinquency.
Mm-hmm.
And so they randomly, somehow, this is how they think it will work, randomly pick a class of students every year, stick them on an island, and then have them kill one another until there's only one remaining. It's called Battle Royale. Yeah. Directed by Kinji Fukasaku. And this film is fucking awesome. It is gory, over the top. You know, they've all got things strapped around their neck, and if they don't participate or move outside the boundaries, their head explodes.
I still haven't seen Battle Royale.
You gotta watch it.
I know. It's like, and everyone's like, Hunger Games, my ass, Battle Royale. You know, like,
exactly.
Yeah.
That's the big claim to fame for this, that apparently the woman who wrote Hunger Games had never ever heard of Battle Royale. Sure. Good on you, Suzanne Collins. We all believe you. But yeah, this film stands the test of time. And I've read the book. I don't think the book's as good. I think
the movie's better.
This is a film which does a better job of selling the horror and the thrill, there's a thrill for them in a good way, but the tension of this whole scene as you get to know this group of kids who are all, I think, 15 or 16.
Yeah.
So, which makes it even
harder. And they have to kill each other.
Brutally murder one another.
Wow. And how do they split the factions? Is it like rugby team?
No, it's all in all. The kids quickly form alliances, but knowing that you're going to have to turn and eventually on each other. Yeah.
Yeah, it's harsh. Okay, nice one. My number four is a film that I actually watched again not too long ago because I remember when I saw it, I wasn't sure what to expect. It's another Steven Spielberg film. It's called Munich. It stars Eric Bana, Daniel Craig, Ciaran Hinds, and I heard about this. It's basically that during the 1972 Olympic Games in Munich, 11 Israeli athletes, it's a real story, are taken hostage and murdered by this Palestinian terrorist group known as Black September. So when I heard that, I thought it was like a thriller set at the Olympics. I didn't know what to expect. What happened was, after that, that's the first like opening of the movie. In retaliation, the Israeli government recruits this group of Mossad agents to track down and execute those responsible for the attack. And that's a team of Eric Bana and Daniel Craig, who's a driver, and Ciaran Hinds, who's like a cleaner, all this sort of thing. And it becomes this really harsh. This is Spielberg's harshest film.
Saving Private Ryan?
Ah, shit, yeah. Okay, all right, maybe that. But Paul always has an issue with Steven Spielberg's family yes. themes that he sticks with.
Everything's nice at the end, hooray!
This is not, there's really none of that
here. She knows this too, obviously.
He went through a period. But this, to me, it's so dark, this film. It's so dark. And the things that go down, it's basically the most of the film is these guys carrying out different assassinations and dealing with the consequences of, for instance, they're trying to blow up some guy's house, but they have to make sure his daughter doesn't answer the phone so the daughter doesn't die. It has to only be him that gets killed. And it's a really interesting, like, very thrilling, holy shit, she's at the phone.
Definitely qualifies, for sure.
Yeah, and it's so absorbing and effective. And I think it's actually, like, because Spielberg is making these characters struggle with the fact that can we just kill these people? Like, they haven't done anything to, you know, they're having that whole thing. It's really, really like cool. It's almost a film that needs to be made because it gives you this moral quandary thing, which really entertains you. And so insofar as holy shit, what would I do? So yeah, really wicked stuff. Munich. Actually, there's a scene in Knocked Up where all the characters, Seth Rogen and that, are saying, man, Munich is in a club. Munich is a really good movie. Yeah, yeah, man.
Remember that, yeah.
If we get laid tonight, it's because of Eric Bana. So, yes, anyway.
All right, another one of the films that we champion a lot around these parts, but, again, not many people have seen it. Mm. Those that have, as far as I'm aware, always report back positively about it. Bill Paxton's directorial debut, Frailty.
Frailty is the shit, man! That's the shit. I should have put that on the list. Good call.
Yeah, 2001, 100 minutes long. It does not outstay its welcome. And Matthew McConaughey powers Booth in this movie. It basically Bill Paxton is the dad who is murdering people because he says God is telling him to murder people because they're actually demons.
Yep.
And then we
two kids.
Flash forward to the future. Matthew McConaughey is one of his sons who basically says, my dad was this serial killer and he's reporting this all to an FBI agent. So it's recounting his version of events in the past and then how it comes back to the future. And I won't spoil this one.
No, you have to go in.
Even though it's 21 years old and we've probably spoiled it seven times on the show.
Yeah, don't go in like clean because the thing about this film is the thing I took away from it was like, how bold of you, film, to make this the ending of your show, for you to say the thing you're saying by making the film end this way. I was like, that's amazing. Bill Paxton is the I was like, immediately, give me his next movie. Immediately. No longer was he, you know, Hudson, yeah. So yeah, no, this was brilliant shit. Frailty, check it out. Yeah. Check it out.
And again, I know we've banged on it a bit, but until it becomes one of these big, big films which everyone has seen, it's not going to be the best. It's going to be as a cult film. I want to champion it when I can.
No, you should. Frailty's the shit. Okay, nice one. My number three, there's a lot of T to the C on this list, everyone. And this latest entry is Collateral.
Yeah, my number two.
Number two? All right, man. So Collateral is basically the... you can pick about four films where a film says, oh, Tom Cruise can't act, he's the same guy in every film. This is one where he's absolutely not. There's this, there's Born on the 4th of July. There's a lot of movies where he just doesn't play into type at all. And this is him being... he describes this character as rough trade in a great suit. He's a hitman. And he walks around, and his method is that he basically goes to get a cab, and he threatens or coerces the cab driver into doing shit for him and facilitating his kills.
Yeah,
and then
and of course, there's no way that cab driver is going to walk away.
Yeah. Exactly. So this Michael Mann film about him going around and Jamie Foxx.
Last is the, good Michael Mann movie.
What was the last one? It was Heat, then this, then
Black Hat was after this.
Oh shit! Yeah, might be
Public Enemies. Was that after this?
I never saw that one.
Public Enemies after wasn't great.
I heard that wasn't great, yeah. So the reason it's so cool, I guess, is that you're seeing the Tom Cruise charm through this horrible character that you know is an awful person, and you are still... it's so engaging to see the cat and mouse and to see Jamie Foxx's desperation. And I remember that Jamie Foxx said... because this was one of his first big movie roles. He was previously a TV guy.
Was he?
Yeah, he was on... he had a Jamie Foxx show.
Okay. Right?
And he said he actually, who did he interview for? I'm sure it's this movie. He interviewed for this director, Michael Mann. And Michael Mann had actually interviewed with him years before and wrote down on his thing, TV actor.
Right? Oh, wow.
Yeah. Right. And then finally the studio said, no, give him a shot. So Jamie Foxx says that he went to Michael. Michael Mann said, okay, listen, you can work with me, but you got to get better. You got to get better. So I need you to learn to act. Right?
Wow.
And you know what?
Balls strike good.
If you watch this film, when you open it, Jamie Foxx has got glasses and he's a rundown old cabbie. He really looks...
he's not old.
He's not old, but he looks old. He comes off old.
Between he and Yada Pinkett Smith.
Well, yeah. That's the thing though. But I can see that the way he's shot Jamie Foxx and the way Jamie Foxx is doing things, he's acting like a cabbie. He's not actually like some cool guy who's a cabbie. You know, he's not doing that.
No,
he's absolutely
true.
Playing
but
it
by
well.
The end of the film, he does embrace this sort of reluctant action hero.
He does, but it works really well.
I agree.
The
arc
is
good.
And he actually talks about how he had to get better as an actor. So it's just kind of, there you are. So that's what Hollywood people think. If you're like, you know, feel like that and everything, you're a TV actor.
And the original point that you made that, you know, Tom Cruise being a villain, which is something he very rarely does.
Very rare.
And B, allowed himself to be, look, you know, old and you know, gray hair and all the rest of that.
So good.
The earliest part, or maybe the earliest instance of him doing that, where I'm prepared to, in a way, sully my image to act, to do something different.
Absolutely. And this is, you know, he's proved himself, basically.
Yeah.
You know, he ain't calling him weirdo, but whatever. He can act.
Good film. Good film. And it does culminate in a pretty great scene between, very thrilling scene between the three main players in the movie.
Oh,
Mark Ruffalo also co-stars as the detective who's investigating all these assassinations. So, yeah.
All the moments are great.
All right, that was my two, so straight back to you for yours.
My number two is a lesser-known film by Kevin Costner. That I have always... this is a sleeper, okay?
This is a good choice.
Yeah, no one ever heard about this film. Yep. I happened to see it, and it shocked me to my core. It's called Mr. Brooks.
Yep. Right? Could have been on my list. That's good.
Oh, dude. All right, so basically, Kevin Costner plays this very well-respected businessman in the community, Earl Brooks, and he is, you know, he's a captain of industry, yada, yada, but he has a secret. He's a fucking serial killer, and beneath his family man facade is this murderous alter ego named Marshall. It's William Hurt. So literally the device in this film is that William Hurt is in his head, but he actually appears in the scene, and they talk to each other about killing and this and that and whatever, okay? And then he's like, okay, the whole story is that he's been doing this for years, and it's horrible, by the way. And he's like, okay, we're going to do one final one. We're going to just do one final murder.
Sure.
But then, this is weird. Dane Cook is in this film, and he's excellent, okay?
That is weird.
Yeah, he witnesses it, and then he goes, listen, I saw you do that shit. I'm going to blackmail you. I also want to be a killer, and I find, ooh, this is wicked. You got to take me with you and teach me how to kill people. And that's what this film was about. But there was a lot of elaborate shit that happens in the background, and it goes all over the place and doesn't end in the place you would think it. It is a brilliant film.
Who directed this?
This is directed by Bruce A. Evans.
Oh, yeah. He directed Cuffs.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Ah! Oh, that's very impressive. Yeah, so it's really cool. And it's, no one, for some reason, no one's ever heard of this film. I talked to people about it. Oh, no. Check it out.
That's a good one to champion.
Check out Mr. Brooks.
As you alluded, I think we'll be doing more of this in future, kind of finding films that
may
not have been the most obvious choices that probably aren't as good as some of the ones we've talked about before, but need some love.
Totes.
Yeah, actually, just looking it up now, Mr. Brooks and Cuffs are Bruce A. Evans' only two films.
Oh, what a shame.
As a director. He's written a bunch of others, some of which are not particularly good. But yeah, interesting.
Directing is a great track record. There you go.
Two for two as far as you and I are concerned, especially for sleeper films that people haven't seen before.
Totes.
All right, we're coming to our number ones, and so I'll give you my recap.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of dissension this week. Getting on very well.
I know, because they're trying to get... that one, yeah.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good choice too, yeah. All right, my number 10 is The Lives of Others. 9, Infernal Affairs. 8, The Secret in Their Eyes. 7, Old Boy. 6, Training Day. 5, Identity. 4, Battle Royale. 3, Frailty. 2, Collateral. And that's the only one that we've crossed over so far.
That's right.
I wonder, my number one, I couldn't leave it off. This is the personification of a 2000s thriller as far as I'm concerned. It rewrote all the rules. It announced to the world the arrival of this particular filmmaker who's continued to dominate all the way through to present day. Love him or hate him, love his films or hate them. He's polarizing in some respects. It's Christopher Nolan's Memento.
Yeah, I thought about it as well. I've left it off, but it's a monologue.
I can see why you'd leave it off again, because I left off Children of Men, I Can Now Reveal, which would automatically be a walk-up.
Yeah, that's what I thought you were going to say.
Yeah, Children of Men would be my number one, but talk about it too often.
Yeah, we got to, exactly. So, this is good. I like this thing.
So, but I couldn't leave that one and Memento off.
Understandable.
You know,
when we saw this film, because I remember you telling me, like, this is told backwards. That was the sell of the movie. It's not
sort of backwards.
It's like jump around here, but it's so... The jump around or the break of the rules, because it's not linearly backwards, still works way better than if they did it that way.
What a device to show antegrade amnesia, where you can't form new memories. Yeah. So we got to go back. Every time we see something now, we're revealing it for the first time.
Just like someone who has amnesia.
Yep.
Fucking amazing, right? Fucking amazing. And Guy Pearce being the bomb at this, right? How did he get this, man? Guy Pearce, our dude from Australia.
This is right around the LA Confidential time. So I suspect that's very
good. Yeah.
And obviously he's dropped off and we don't see much of Guy Pearce.
Iron Man 3. Sorry, I'm not kidding.
Well, that was 10 years ago.
Was it?
Yeah.
Crap.
Ish.
Shit. Yeah, you're right. Oh, but you know what? I think he lives in Australia, man, this guy. He actually on purpose shuns the red carpet.
Yeah. He did a whole bunch of Australian straight-to-TV or binge films.
And good on him. He's like happy. You know.
Yeah, if you're happy, you don't need to be dominating the whole way through your career. Yep. I don't need to talk about it anymore. You've all heard us talk bang on about Memento. Everyone knows about Memento, so that's my number one best thriller of the 2000s.
Nice one, brother. My 10 to 1 goes like this. 10, American Psycho. 9, Swordfish. 8, Minority Report.
It doesn't help it when you put it in my voice.
I think you'll find it does.
All right, do it again.
Swordfish.
Right, there you go.
There you go, son. See? Thank you. My number 7, What Lies Beneath. 6, The Hurt Locker. 5, Phone Booth. 4, Munich. 3, Collateral. 2, Mr. Brooks. And my number 1 is, if it's not the best, it's one of my favorites. It's also a sleeper. It's Running Scared.
Oh, yeah, you've talked about this.
Right? I've talked about this a lot. And everyone actually thinks.
Not my honorable mentions.
Yeah, I think it's a 9 out of 10 film, man. This is fucking insanely good. It's about mafia.
I loved it the first time I saw it. Second time I watched it, I was like, it wasn't as good as I remember.
Okay, because that's it. Because all of the nasty shit snuck up on you when you saw it the first time. It's about Paul Walker, right? Who's a mafia flunky, and he's ordered to dispose of this gun that killed a pair of cops. And he hides them in his basement where they're found by this dude, a kid from next door, who uses one to shoot his brutal stepfather, who's a Russian mobster. And the boy runs off and Joey pursues him into the criminal underworld, trying to retrieve that weapon to save himself. And meanwhile, there's like Chaz Palminteri, who's a cop, who's trying to follow him and he's got his own agenda. It is a really complex film, but the places it goes and the spots it puts you in are completely unexpected. And you are seeing like normal people reacting in a way that, like, you yourself might do if you came across the things they came across, you know? And it is so freaking unexpected. This is the best acting Paul Walker has ever done, all right?
Oof.
Straight up. This is shows you how good a director, or how much a director has on the film, you know what I mean? Like, if you're a good director, you get these performances out of these guys. It's insane. And Vera Farmiga is in it as well. Sorry, did I say that?
Another side, yes, she's.
Yes, so yes, Running Scared, definitely check it out if you haven't.
Yeah, it's really all over the place. It's hard to describe.
It is really hard to describe.
Dark and disturbing this film does get to, which is why it surprises
and
me.
And it flips to it in a second. You know, like, damn, it's really insane.
Really surprised me that you like this one so much on that basis alone.
Love it.
All right, that's our list. Quick rundown of any other honorable mentions. I mentioned Children of Men. I mentioned Running Scared. The only one for me would be David Cronenberg's A History of Violence, which I almost had on here.
Okay, well, on the things that I kind of like this film, I liked Basic. I liked Proof of Life. Remember that?
Basic, wow.
Is John Travolta.
Yeah,
I like that one.
Samuel
Proof
Jackson.
Of Life is like, that was cool because Meg Ryan and fucking Russell Crowe never actually hooked up in the film and it was made all the way better for it. I liked Boiler Room because I liked that shit back then. And you remember that fucking movie, Man on Fire?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good-ass film. It's a surprisingly good film. Yeah, keep going.
Nope, that's it. I've already done mine. So let's get over to the listeners for their feedback on the topic at hand in a segment that wraps up most every show. It's called The Pop 10.
Talk about Pop 10. Talk about Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with Chris Yeaney. Number 3, The Machinist. Another Christian Bale film, mate.
Oh, yes, Machinist.
And then he's staying on the Christian Bale-ness with American Psycho for his number 2. And then number 1, Identity. Rob Walters said 3, Running Scared. There you are, sir. 2, Zodiac.
Wow.
The David Fincher film.
Nice.
And number 1, Frailty. So yeah. Rob's obviously on our train of thinking there. John Amento from the Pioneer Comics podcast. Memento, such a novel idea and great cast. Unbreakable. Yes, it's superheroes in the end, but it's a thriller through and through. I have to agree. That's fair.
Yeah, fair enough.
And Zodiac again. Great cast, driving story, scary as fuck. And atmospheric as well.
David Fincher.
Gary Stevenson said, these are some of my favorites. 3, Phone Booth. There you are.
Ah.
2, Taken. I'd say Taken's more of an action film, personally.
You could call it action thriller.
But yeah,
though.
Sure.
Yeah.
And number 1, Inside Man. First mention of that. Denzel and Clive Owen.
Wasn't a fan of that one.
No, didn't like it? No,
Not as much. It was all right.
No, I think it's fine.
First Spike Lee film was fine.
Philip Meany said, Caish. Number 3, a film I don't think I've seen.
I've heard of it, actually, but no, okay. Yeah, me neither.
Number 2, The Prestige.
Mm.
And number 1, Dead Man's Shoes, which is a very low-budget sort of revenge thriller from the UK.
You seen it?
Yep. Mm. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Cool.
Pretty good. Nicole Presley said, there's so many good ones. Nice list, guys. There are dozens of good options. And so here's some maybe less popular ones. 3, Disturbia. Back when Shia still had a promising future, because let's be honest, he's a great actor, regardless of his personal persona.
True.
And this film had me at the edge of my seat. Number 2. Vanilla Sky. Tom, please figure out you're in a cult.
Totally.
And number 1, The Da Vinci Code. Whoa, controversial.
I liked it. You know what?
I never read the books though, she said.
Ah, that's why. Because up on screen, it was exactly a pace for pace for the book. And I'm like, I wish it was better than the book. That's the only thing. There's nothing wrong with it, but there you are.
Okay, fair enough. Joe Doherty said number 3, Memento. Number 2, Children of Men. And number 1, No Country for Old Men, Wayne.
Oh, one
of
your fuck.
Absolute favorites.
Smiley. That's not a thriller.
Oh, this is some thrilling.
Yeah,
it's
my
a
dick's
crime.
Thrilling. So yeah, right.
Is it? Who's it now?
I mean, for me.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
There you go. Smiley Samani said he does like himself a good thriller. Number 3, Michael Clayton.
Oh, yeah. Oh, again, more of a drama, but yeah, okay. Yeah.
Number 2, Inside Man. Number 1, The Constant Gardener.
Heard a lot about that. Have you seen it?
Yeah, wasn't bad.
Wasn't bad? Okay.
Sam Hurley from the Movie Views and 20 Qs podcast agrees with me. At number 3, The Secret in Their Eyes. Man, Hollywood shit the bed with the remake. There you are. Number 2, Old Boy. Man, Hollywood shit the bed with the remake. And number 1, Children of Men. Yes, it's 100 different genres, but it counts, Paul.
Yeah, fair enough.
Fair enough. Mina Harker said, Dan said, 1 Hour Photo at number 3, the Robin Williams film.
I never saw it.
Inside Man number 2 and number 1, A History of Violence from Cronenberg.
Yeah, popular one, I thought.
Brad Chessel said, can we have a poll? How many times will the soundboard say,
thrill me?
Apparently only once, though. I'm a little disappointed in myself, I have to admit, Brad.
Is that from some kind of 2000s movie?
That actually, no, it's from 1980s.
Okay. But
it just says,
thrill me.
There you go, twice now.
Fuck off.
It's from Night of the Creeps. In 1980s, Brad said, number 3, Collateral. Number 2, No Country for Old Men again.
Oh, yeah.
Number 1, The Departed.
Deported.
Yep. David Power, top of the patrons of the show, said, this is really hard. Fine, I'm being ruthless as fuck and leave off everything that's even slightly more of another genre. The undisputed top 3 are, number 3, Identity. Number 2, Mulholland Drive from David Lynch. And number 1, Memento from Christopher Nolan.
Nice.
Josh Ragland had Training Day, No Country for Old Men, and Frailty is his number 1. Great choice there,
oh, cool.
Josh. And lastly, Lloyd Green had, also from the Pioneer Comics podcast, Zodiac, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and Memento.
There you go.
There we are. That's your feedback. Thank you so much to everyone who got back to us. Sorry I couldn't get through all of it. We really, truly do appreciate it. Wayne, how do the folk get back to us with their choices on the topics at hand, or indeed feedback more generally?
Well, after you bounce from thecountdownpodcast.com, you can...
Thrill me.
You can search for The Countdown Podcast on just get our socials, Google us, or send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
Like and follow the show on Podbean. We don't ask this very often, but you know, I still hear lots of podcasts doing it. Hit us up with a review. We've got lots of new listeners to the show.
Yeah, it helps us out.
On review on whatever platform you're listening, be it on Spotify, certainly on Apple Podcasts, where the vast majority of our listeners come from. Mm-hmm. If you haven't done a review there yet, it would really help us out in terms of raising our profile. And yeah, Facebook listener community, links in the show notes, and you can get on board with the discussions around all things Countdown.
Boom.
All right, we haven't decided episode 374 for next week.
We'll come to you. We'll come to you.
We'll come back to you during the week with that in the Facebook listener community. We hope you will join us then. But yeah, we'll get our shit together now. I think we'll organize the next few weeks.
Word.
All right, cool. Thanks so much for joining us again for the top 10 thrillers of the noughties.
That's the show.
My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
Fuck. I stand resolute, motherfucker.
Not that he did anything wrong today, really, much.
You know.
Just generally speaking, Wayne does stand resolute. We'll catch you next time.
See ya.